My name is Vanessa, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlanta Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA, and since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which may more specifically deal with your addiction. Our literature persons, Kareth and Giroux, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Ashley will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Ashley. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help others, alcoholics, to achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Greg will read the steps.
Hi, I'm Greg. I'm an alcoholic. Excuse me. 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Laura will read the traditions.
Hi, my name is Laura. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Michael Jay.
My name is Michael Jacobson. I'm an alcoholic. Wow. My sobriety date's December 22nd, 2007. My sponsor's Helen. I'm in step 9. I'm living in 10, 11, and 12. And I'm real nervous. I'm really nervous. It's an honor and a privilege to be asked to speak in AA. And I was really happy when Eddie asked me to speak. Thank you, buddy. You know, of course, the first thing I thought of when he asked me was, you know, don't you have like late September, October, you know, it's kind of warm in August. But, you know, what I learned in AA is when you're asked, you say yes. And I did. I said yes. Kind of reminds me of when I went to rehab. A couple people in the program, I was looking to go to rehab, and someone in the program said to me that you need to, you can't look at rehab as you're booking a vacation. You just go. It was you, Ava. It was you. So what it was like, you know, how it is, and, you know, what's going on today. Okay. Grew up middle class. My dad's an alcoholic. Loving family. I was a problem child. Did okay in school. Kind of skated by, but did well in the SATs. A lot of crazy in my family. I remember going to a bar mitzvah and going to my cousins, telling them that, you know, I think there's a lot of insanity in our family. And I said, you know, it kind of runs in our family. They said, no, it gallops in our family. Got introduced to alcohol very young, and I'm not going to bore you with the details of my drinking. I did drink a lot, and I did get pretty out of hand. But what I can tell you is this, is that when I came here, I got to learn that it's not how much you drink, it's what alcohol does to you, what it did for me. It was the solution to every problem I had. It made me funnier. It made me more handsome. Well, it made me funnier. It was my friend. It was my adversary. And it got me into the rooms. I'm not going to tell you that when I came in, it was like, oh, great, I got it, and, you know, I haven't, you know, had a drink or anything since, because that's not my story. My story is full of relapses, and, you know, these 2 years and 8 months is the longest sobriety I've ever had, and I've learned from the rooms here that it's not so hard to stop. It's staying stopped. That's the hard part, you know? So about 6 years ago, I had about 2 years of sobriety, and I was working a program. I had a sponsor, but I never did the steps, and I got everything I wanted. Well, what I thought I wanted. I got power. I had a company that I started from scratch, and, you know, I had a boss that basically told me that successful people have egos, and let me tell you, I took that for a ride like no one, you know, could think of. So when I came here, I had some pretty big ego problems to deal with, and I think that's part of why I relapsed so much. So, got the right girlfriend. She was adorable. Got the right apartment. Business was great. I'm ecstatic. And I decided that I could drink safely, you know? Things were really good. Oh, come on. What I need those rooms for and stuff like that. I could have a couple of drinks, you know? And I remember I broke up with the girlfriend, and I was down in Dominican Republic and smoking some cigars, and I'm like, okay, let me have a drink, you know. Well, within a month or two after having that drink, hi, Peggy, I really became messed up. And basically what it is that once I put alcohol in my body, all bets are off. I thought I could handle it, you know. I remember people telling me, but it's willpower. You could just put it down. Yeah, all right. I couldn't put it down. Things started getting worse. I started doing some other things in addition to my alcohol abuse. And those things really started becoming a problem. I started missing work, but I was the boss. And I felt that, you know, life owed me something, you know? Life owed me. You know, who are these people to say, Michael, is everything okay? I mean, they work for me, you know? Thank you. Well, it's not so bad. It's 5 minutes. Okay. So things started coming to a point where I had to come to the rooms. So I came into the rooms about 4 years ago, and I had three sponsors since being here. My first was Alo, who's my buddy. And then, of course, I decided to take this program very seriously, and I got Jeff as my sponsor. Jeff told me, basically, you know, your ego, you're insane, you know, all these great things that really, you know, sat well with me. You know, they really sat well with me. I remember sitting with him, you know, doing the big book, and so we were on the table of contents. And I'm like, so, Jeff, why are we spending an hour on the table of contents? And he said, you know, you're very ill. You're very ill. Very ill. So I knew I was in for a ride. Jeff endured me, came to my house when I was missing, came to visit me in rehab, and, you know, that's how the story goes. I went to rehab kind of kicking and screaming, but I stayed. I relapsed after rehab, you know, I guess it didn't work. And it was Ron Black. I had 2 days, and I was talking to Jeff, and Jeff's like, you got to go away for 6 months. You're going to die. And I remember talking to Ron Black, and he said, look, I did this in the rooms. You can do this, too. You got to get, you know, you got to do a program. You got to work with a sponsor. You got to, you know, you got to come here. And I was like, okay, all right. Well, I had nowhere else to go. I couldn't afford to go back to rehab, and I wasn't going to go to a state one, and I started on my path to come here. I think I had 9 days. I had like six girls in the car with me. I was at a Watch, and I ran into Jeff. I'm like, oh no, he sees me. Well, Jeff dropped me, and so I didn't have a sponsor. And then I had to go get another sponsor. But before I got a sponsor, you know, this whole dating thing, you know, being new in recovery, I'm thinking to myself, I'm never going to be able to date. I mean, Jesus. I mean, 6 months sober, you know, I relapse. You know, so I'll never get my year, and I can date. Well, I was on a quest. I was on a quest, and I met a girl here in the Brooms, and we quickly fell in love. And within 90 days, she moved in. Within 6 months, her dogs moved in, and yeah, we were just one happy family. One happy family. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so if you're thinking of dating early in recovery, yeah, go right ahead. Yeah. Go right ahead. Tell me how that works out for you. Yeah. Well, anyway, it's not that I didn't love her, because I did. She was everything I wanted, that I thought I wanted for me. I was completely insane, but I mean, I definitely loved her, you know. I mean, she became my higher power. I mean, she was my higher power. She was okay. I was okay. Well, it's about a year into our relationship, and it was very, very adorable. We both had the same sobriety date, so we had a double watch. Yeah, yeah, that was great. That was great. Anyway, so, you know, me left to my own devices, I ran into quite a few bills and debt trying to keep her, you know, in the lap of luxury, you know. I didn't even know what luxury was. I mean, I just borrowed from everything, ran up every credit card I had, trying to keep appearances going. I'm doing great. I'm wonderful. Yeah, I'm great. And this is somebody that was doing the work. I mean, I was out there with Helen, you know, sitting and doing my big book work. I missed something. Yeah, I definitely missed something. Wow, a minute left. Well, so, year and a half sober, I hit the worst bottom of my life. My girlfriend and I broke up, and my buddy Pierre took me in because I had nowhere else to go, and that was a year ago. And what I've been doing the last year is getting my life back, you know? I've gotten honest. He told me if I didn't get honest, I'd drink. And today I'm honest, you know? I work a program. I work with my sponsor, you know? I follow suggestions. I do service at my home group. I do service, you know? I'm not here to take from AA. I'm here to give. If you're new, you're not here by accident, okay? None of us got here by accident. You're in a great place, you know, find a sponsor, do the work, stop blaming the world for all your problems, you know. I know now that anytime I have a problem, you know, or someone's upset with me, it's what did I do, not what they did to me. I love AA. I love my home group. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Mika.
I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Mika. Stacy said I should button this. I'm gonna do it. my sobriety date is December 18th, 2006. My home group is AG, and my sponsor's name is Christine L. Her sponsor's name is Thea, her sponsor's name is Cindy, and her sponsor's name is Clancy. That's important for me because I don't like to take direction, but if I know that the person who's giving me direction is taking direction, and that person is taking direction, and they're all going through that, then it's a little bit easier for me. Because I know she knows that I don't like it. it's an honor and a privilege and incredibly terrifying to be asked to speak, and I'm very grateful for that. I don't always go out of my way to do things that make me feel uncomfortable, and that's where I have the most growth. I was talking to my sober sister the other day, and she said, grow or die. And I thought that was pretty intense, but it's very true, actually. So I'm standing here because I don't want to die. Thank you, Michael, for speaking. I actually identified a lot, which surprises me. I'm always glad when I'm wrong. I'll just say that. I was adopted. And that's not why I'm an alcoholic, but I use that a lot, to justify my behavior. I'm clearly Asian, and I was adopted into a white family, and I grew up in a very small white town, and that's also not why I'm an alcoholic, but I used it to justify my behavior a lot. I never felt like I belonged. I physically looked like I didn't belong, and I also didn't feel like I belonged. And, that's not why I drank, but I used it as an excuse a lot. If you're seeing a trend here, it's gonna trend on like that. Just making up excuses for my behavior. Even from before I took my first drink, I was convinced, in retrospect, I'm convinced that I was an alcoholic before I even knew what alcohol was. I remember being in nursery school, and everyone would gather around to listen to a story, and I would stand by the bookshelf and just like lean on the bookshelf because I was way too cool for the reading circle. I already had like a really bad case of like, don't you know who I think I am? And that's, I love that phrase because it's just, I have a really bad case of that. being asked to speak is very frightening. But my sponsor says that there's a difference between ego-threatening and life-threatening. And the thing is about my disease is that it wants me to think that the ego-threatening things are life-threatening. I took a cab here and was very, I really wanted to ask the cab driver how far he could take me away from here. I was like, listen, I have maybe $60 in my wallet. Please just take me anywhere else. But I'm glad to be here. My drinking progressed really very clearly. I had my first drink actually when I was 9. My dad used to come home after work and grab a beer and sit in his lounge chair, and a couple of times he gave me some sips of his beer. And I knew he was doing it as a joke, so I pretended like I didn't like it. But the truth is, I loved it. It like went straight to my little head. You know, I was a little person, and it just, you know, I think it goes faster when you're small, so it just went right to my head, and I just had never felt anything like that before. I think when I was about 12 or 13 was when I first got drunk. I actually don't remember my first drunk. I don't know if that's because it wasn't significant or because I blacked out. I just really have no idea. And what happened was I would only drink in the summers and only on special occasions. So, you know, on holidays and people's birthday, but before you knew it, we were celebrating people's birthday who were like born in the fall and it was summer. And, you know, and then that progressed to, well, weekends are special occasions, so let's do that every weekend. And then that progressed to every night because nighttime's a special occasion. And then before you knew it, I think one time we even drank because my friend's grandmother died, and that was like a really special occasion. So we had to get drunk. And it really was just like that. There's nothing very special about my drinking. What happened was the last time I took a drink was May 25th, 2005, and my last drink was the first time I experienced what it really was to be powerless. I was on a flight back from London, visiting a friend, and I had drank the whole time I was there. I don't remember it at all. I remember seeing the changing of the guards. That was pretty cool. I think I was sober for that. I told myself, don't say yes when the flight attendant comes by and asks you if you want wine. Because I think wine is actually complimentary on those flights. And I was 19, so I was of age. Yeah. And I just told myself over and over again, just say no, just say no. And 2 seconds later, literally, he got to my side and he said, would you like wine? And I said, yes, without even thinking about it. That whole conversation I had just had in my head was completely gone. And then he asked, would you like red or white? And like a good alcoholic, I just said both because I really couldn't decide. So I landed. I don't remember the trip home at all. I don't know if I was just really out of it or if wine just has a weird effect on me, but I know I got air sick. That was fun. My dad, when I got home, my dad confronted me and said, I know you've been drinking a lot this whole time. You know, because earlier I'd been kicked out of boarding school. I was sent away to rehab, where I really didn't gain anything other than like 20 pounds and like an addiction to pancakes. So that really didn't help me. I really didn't get it. And so I had been drinking for about a year and a half after that. And so it was like the final straw he had with me. And so I gave in. I surrendered. I remember like 3 months sober, I'd been going to a meeting every day, and I got down on my knees and I was praying to nothing because I didn't believe in anything. And finally one day I just said, I can't, like, please help. All I said was please help, and I was down on my knees, and I just, all of a sudden I just started crying, like really hard, and just felt really warm, and it was a spiritual experience. Unfortunately, I didn't hold on to that spiritual experience by doing the work. I just had a sponsor by name, really. I got to the fourth step and then sat on it for years and became increasingly ill. I just was very, very sick in sobriety, the most unpleasant place to be if you're curious, but don't try it yourself. I don't recommend it. It's very unpleasant. I took some hostages with, which, like, you know, some normal people would call relationship, but, it wasn't so. And, I feel like I'm running out of time. I was really, really dry, and I ended school. I somehow got through college, and I moved to New York just because I had always wanted to move to New York. And I had already gotten in touch with someone who I knew, who I used to drink with, and she brought me to this meeting. And nothing's been the same since, actually. The only way I know how to express my gratitude for that is by saying yes when I'm asked to speak, and by saying yes for any AA request, really. Because I found my sponsor here. She actually, Hannah pushed me towards my sponsor, and, you know, I started doing the work, and my life completely changed. If you're sitting here and you don't have a sponsor and you're thinking about maybe doing this work by yourself, you're probably taking directions from a crazy person. You need to find someone. At the end of this meeting, we raise our hands. They say, all members raise your hand. There's bound to be someone around you. Grab them and say, I need a sponsor, or I need help, even if you have a sponsor. And thanks for letting me share.
Hi, everybody. My name's Harmon Veely. I'm a real alcoholic. I think, is that good? All right. Actually, I would like to add to the list of people that are out of town. I come from a small town west of here called Akron, Ohio. Okay. And also want to add to the events every... second weekend in June, we have what's called Founders Day, and I know some of you have been there, so please come back. Without you guys, we wouldn't have that. And another plug for the area, and this is how I got here, by saying one simple word, yes. One simple word, yes, to being on the foundation for Dr. Bob's house. That's how I got to meet Jeffrey, and that's how I got to meet Ellen, and that's how I got to meet a lot of wonderful people in this great city of New York. And we're having a blast, aren't we, honey? My wife came with me, and we've did the Long Island for, I guess it was a couple days, and we've been running around the cities for the last 3 days, and we've just had a wonderful time. And I want to thank Jeffrey, and I want to thank this group for allowing me this honor and privilege. And I believe sometimes we can get a little bit jaded by people saying an honor and privilege, but you will definitely hear, and like we heard earlier that she was clearly Asian, you'll clearly know I was a hopeless chronic alcoholic, and to be here tonight is beyond any type of human and imagination and any type of anything short of a divine miracle. And like I said, I just want to thank the group. It really is an honor and privilege. And I knew I landed in the right place. We did the Jones Beach thing on Sunday morning, and I had met somebody there that was from Akron. He happened to be in town. I was doing an anniversary or something there, and he came up after me. And lo and behold, he was here tonight, and he said he brought some guys from the East. And I said, oh, that's great. And as I was talking to him, it looked like he had a tear in his eye. I said, well, you know, it's good to see you. And then he's had a tear in his eye. He goes, man, I'm so grateful. And I said, I'm grateful too. So we went around. I was talking to some other people and saw him again. He says, man, I'm really grateful. And no doubt about it, he had tears coming out of both of his eyes. And just before I got ready to sit down here and talk, I ran into him again. He says, I'm really grateful. And tears were just falling down this guy's face. And I says, I got to find out why this guy is so grateful to share it with a group. And I said, why are you so grateful? And he looked at me just dead in the eye. He says, I'm grateful I'm not as ugly as you. So I knew I was in the right place. And Dave, where are you? Yeah, he knows who it was. But I love to have fun in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to start with a prayer. I call it the real serenity prayer. And it goes like this. Dear God, so far today I've done all right. I haven't gossiped. I haven't lost my temper. I haven't been grumpy, nasty, or selfish. But in a few minutes, God, I'm going to get out of bed, and that's when I'm going to need all the help I can get. Amen. And the reason I say that's a real serenity prayer, we heard so eloquently here earlier, an alcoholic of my sort, real alcoholic of the hopeless variety, not drinking is not a substitute for drinking. I want to start with this one prayer, actually, and it comes right from this part of the country. And this guy goes like this. He says, Lord, take me where you want me to go. Lord, let me meet who you want me to meet. Lord, tell me what you want me to say, and Lord, keep me out of your way. Amen. Now, if we could do that, life would be good for everybody, especially the people that are near and dear to me. A couple numbers that are real important to me. 54, right? 54? Where are we at? This is 2010. 55, man. Time flies when you're not having fun, or when you're having fun. 55, 33, and 23. Those aren't my measurements yet, but close to it. 55, that's how old I am. 33, I've been married to this beautiful gal that came with me. I call her an angel of the first degree. And 23, that's how long I've been sober. So obviously, if I didn't have the lowest number, I wouldn't have the other two numbers. My sobriety date's July 10th of 1987. I do have a home group. It's called The Turning Point. I have one sponsor. I've had one home group, one sponsor since I've been sober. And for me, that's how important it is. I'm going to summarize what Bill says in 12 and 12, and hopefully we'll get this point across. And he says, AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in nature, which if practiced as a way of life can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to be happily and usefully whole. That's what sobriety is about. It's not putting the plug in the jug and sitting in an AA meeting, and I will talk on it, and she did such a good job about describing that. That is not recovery. That is called suicide for an alcoholic of my sort. Because I never had a drinking problem. I got a drinking solution. In other words, I'm one of those alcoholics. If you take the alcohol away, that doesn't produce sobriety. That produces undrunkenness, and there's a world of difference. It's one of those things, if you have a drunken horse thief and you take alcohol away, what are you going to have? You're going to have a sober horse thief. In other words, I was a loser, a liar, a thief, a cheat, and a punk long before I drank. I was sick long before I drank. I want to start with something that I find kind of humorous, but it's true, and I can only speak for myself. Alcoholics Anonymous in itself, there was a one of the first 100 that run around in Akron would say it's self-sufficient in itself. In other words, since I've been sober, I haven't been analyzed, I haven't been hypnotized, I haven't been tranquilized, I haven't been baptized. A lot of them wanted to euthanize me, but I'm still pretty quick on my feet. But what I'm saying, for myself, my alcoholism, I've got one treatment. And oddly enough, and thank God you got it here, and there's a chapter in this book that says there is a solution, and I will talk about my program, and I'll talk about the program, and there is only one. And obviously, my program, it ain't no good. You don't want it. It's not a vision for you. But anyhow, this thing called alcoholism, and we heard it so eloquently, but I need to stop and talk about it because I got a disease that tells me I don't have it. My disease tells me I'm well. My disease tells me it's everybody and everything else. I've got a disease that tells me for me to drink is to die. And let me tell you, for a long time, I welcomed the thought of death. Because that so-called life, I wasn't living, I wasn't existing, I was dying a day at a time. I knew it a day at a time long before I came into AA. It was a day at a time out in the streets out there, out in the jungle that I call it, of alcoholism. So what is an alcoholic and what is alcoholism? And thank God we've got the manual, if you will. In the doctor's opinion, he talks about what I suffer from. I got it, have it, and I'm going to die with it. We hear later on in the book, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. So what is it? Is it somebody who drinks too much and gets in trouble, loses houses, jobs, families, divorces, yada, yada, and all that stuff we hear? Absolutely not. That could be a side effect or an after effect of your drinking and your alcoholism, but doesn't make you an alcoholic. Real simple, what it is I've got a threefold illness, if you will. I'm sick, 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 body, mind, and soul. And what is the physical thing? He tells us a picture without the physical factor is incomplete. And we heard it earlier, I got it, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic, that has, is, and always will be. When I take a drink of alcohol, just one, something happens inside of me, use the New York word if I can, the phenomena, the big word, can't explain it, but I can see it, the phenomena of craving is what Silkworth said. Simply that has, is, and always will be. Once I start drinking, I don't stop till I'm sick, locked up, in trouble, or all the above. Don't matter what I've lost, doesn't matter what's got to be done, doesn't matter who I got to see, doesn't matter all the pain and misery or whatever. Once I take a drink, my body takes over and I can't stop. So obviously, if you had that, and I had it from my first drink, I believe, to my last, don't drink. And we throw that around each other all the time. Well, let me tell you something a lot more powerful than that, and we heard about that on the plane from England. I've got a mind that tells me no matter what, it's going to be different. Obsession, mind, mental obsession. He tells us we pursue it to the gates of insanity and death, and that's truly what I did. So I'm powerless over alcohol because I got a body that can't handle it, but I got a mind that tells me no matter what, it's going to be different next time. I'm powerless over alcohol because I can't safely use alcohol because of the allergy, but I can't quit because my mind won't let me. I'm powerless over alcohol because I'm in a body that can't handle it, but I got a mind that tells me you can and you will. I am powerless over alcohol, and like Bill used to say, I am condemned to drink because of the obsession of the mind, and I'm condemned to die because of the allergy of the body. I'm powerless over alcohol. My body's killing my mind's killing my body. But why did I drink to begin with? And this is the most fun part of the illness. It's the spiritual malady. And we heard it. You hear it all the time. Square peg, round hole, didn't fit my skin, felt different, yada, yada, yada. He does a little bit different. This is my state when I don't drink alcohol. Restless, irritable, discontent. You can add full of fear, guilt, shame, and remorse. And on page 52, he tells us we're having troubles with our personal relationships, couldn't control our emotional natures, we're prey to misery and depression, couldn't make a living, full of fear. And that's what state I have when I don't drink. Therefore, not talking about nursery school, I needed a drink on the way to kindergarten. I don't know about anybody else in here, but I was sick long before I drank. I was born with a hole in the soul, and the only thing that filled that up for a while was alcohol. And simply, like I said, drinking was the solution, not the problem. The problem was life, and the problem was sobriety. I hated it. I couldn't do without it. And like I said, that's what drinking did for me, and he talks about the ease and comfort that alcohol produces. My drinking career, we'll get through it real quick, was 17 years of fear, failure, and frustration. Lived from one jackpot to another. The only thing that happened was the price tag I was willing to give up ever got increasing. And I came from an alcoholic home, and I bring that up a couple, three reasons. Number one, like we heard earlier, one of my favorite excuses. Quite frankly, it doesn't matter what mommy and daddy did for me, to me. Doesn't matter how they loved me, didn't love me. Doesn't matter how they abused me. Doesn't matter of any of those things. Doesn't matter what kind of parents they were. It's what kind of son was I. And this textbook tells me that, as a rule, I must be hard on myself, but always considerate of others. In other words, I suffer from alcoholism, ISM, the last three letters, I for I, the S for self, the M for me. My troubles have been my own making, they always have been, they always will be. That's what he talks about in the book, that selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the root of our troubles. We're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. My troubles are all making, so are my problems. I suffer from alcoholism, and that is the nature of this thing, is to protect itself from itself. I can always blame people, one finger pointing out, three fingers pointing back at myself. Even in sobriety, when I blame somebody, the last two letters in that word blame, the two letters are M-E. It always comes back to the great I am. I can't get away from it, and I hit it, and the textbook says it in no uncertain terms. There's a lot of paradoxes in alcoholism and sobriety. In other words, what I'm saying is I'm not a victim, never was. I was a volunteer. My alcoholism is mine, and once I owned it, it no longer owned me. Back in the second edition of the big book, he talks about some paradoxes. You got to die in order to live, suffer in order to get well, surrender to win, and my favorite, you got to give it away to keep it. And it's the same thing in alcohol and alcoholism. Everything is bass-ackwards, if you will. None of it makes sense. Anyhow, getting back to my childhood, I bring it up because he does such a good job. Two chapters, the family afterwards, chapter to the wives. And I came to AA, and I had an excuse list of why I was an alcoholic that rolled down the floor. Kind of looked like my driving record, okay? And my first one was, if you had my childhood, you'd drink the way I did. And also another thing was, I came from a certain nationality, and I know we're loaded in the room because I can feel it. I was half Irish and half Scottish. Now, you know, if you're born Irish, you got the Irish virus, and that's fear of dehydration. We drank everything we could get our hands on. And you know, if you're Irish and Scottish, half of you wants to drink all the time, and the other half is too cheap to pay for it. And if you don't know what that is, talk to me after the meeting. I'll go ahead and do that. I grew up in a time, and I love it. Mommy and daddy were alcoholic. My brother is an alcoholic. My sister is. So four out of the five of the immediate family were alcoholics. I teased my brother today. I said, I guess there's a loser in every family. He takes it pretty good. But what I'm saying is, in Bill's story, he uses self-knowledge, fear, willpower, bad experiences, all the things we use to keep from drinking. And obviously, I use that too because I swore I wasn't going to be like them. Talking about my alcoholic parents, I'm here to tell you I turned out to be just like them. You become what you hate and you become what you are afraid of. Go figure, that's why that's half the inventory. You inventory your resentments, you inventory your fears because you become that. Anyhow, the long and short of that is I was an alcoholic waiting for a drink to happen. I joke about it today, and you know how we're politically correct with all kinds of things. I think they would describe a child of my nature, I think they would say ADD or ADHD. Back in the 70s, they had letters. It was a little bit simpler. It was ASS. That's what I was. And if you pour alcohol on that, that's what you'll have. I was a punk. I had a bad attitude. I had a chip on my shoulder. It was going to be my way or the highway, and it was self-will run riot, what the book says. I'll get you out of my adolescence years real quick. The only thing that happened between my drink and my alcoholism is I met this beautiful lady that's with me tonight. I call her the angel of the first degree. We ended up getting married and ended up having four kids out of that union, and plays an important part of the story. Anyhow, got out of high school, wanted to get away from them, my parents, and I said, once I get away from them, I'll be okay. Unfortunately, I took my two biggest problems, myself, my alcoholism, and my drinking. Moved in with three of my drinking buddies, and it was off and running 24/7. 6 years, never did graduate from Akron U, got my first DUI, and it was 24/7. And the point I'm trying to make, my alcoholism is mine. Nobody ever made me drink, and I don't know if this part of the country, but you hear a lot about enabling. Funny, this textbook doesn't do it. I don't need enabled to get sick. I can do a fine job. In other words, my people didn't enable me. They love me. I used them. I abused them. I ran them into the ground. Thank you. Got that. And the point I'm trying to make is I can be a victim. Victims never get better. Victims stay sick. And that's what the power, one of the many powers of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyhow, this is how I remember it, and I guess this isn't how it happened. She proposed to me in a weak moment. It sounds better, doesn't it? But the fact of the matter is we decided to get married under the conditions that I settled down. I guess I was a little wild. And I promised her I would, and it would be different. Being the gentleman that I am, that lasted for about 2 weeks. And I made a career change, started working in Cleveland, a city a little bit north of Akron. And the ball was off and rolling, and everything looked good on the outside. God blessed us with an immediate family. She was pregnant with our oldest son. I think we were married 10 or 11 months, and she was pregnant. We have four kids within 5 years. In fact, the girls are 11 months apart. Irish twins, so you could see I had a couple isms going on back then. I had Catholicism and alcoholism. Every time I came out of a blackout, she was pregnant or we were coming home with a kid, and if you don't know how that happens, I'll explain it to you. If you love and you drink and you drink and you love, you're going to have four kids in 5 years. So I wasn't a fighting drunk. But the point I'm trying to make is I had everything. I had all that outside stuff. I mean, I had the company car, Fortune 500, promising career, beautiful woman, two healthy boys, two healthy girls, live in a suburb, the Chevy station wagon, the doggy, everything but the white picket fence. But unfortunately, the major flaw or the only flaw in that whole situation was me. And when I talk about what I did to them and how I treated them, it's a matter of fact. I did what I did. I need to be held accountable for what I said, didn't say, what I did and what I didn't do. And obviously there's two types of sins, sins of commission, what I did do, and sins of omission, what I didn't do. And when I got down to the omission sins, when I took the childhood away from those parents, when I took the husband away from my wife, when I took the son away from my father, and so on and so forth, that's why it talks about a lifetime. You know, you're never ever going to be done with that, and I truly believe that is my personal experience as it's been. But the long and the short of that is I would end up giving everything that was near and dear to me, her, those four kids, a promising career, and it was just like the big book talks about. He talks about a pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. That's not a bottom. A bottom, this book doesn't talk about it in the first 164 pages. A pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. In other words, I ended up talking about where he reaches in this book where I couldn't imagine life with alcohol, I couldn't imagine life without it. And, you know, the point that I'm trying to make is you don't have to die to go to hell. I've been there. Most people come to buildings like that so they don't go to hell. Us alcoholics come to Alcoholics Anonymous so we don't go to back their own living hell. And I would like to tell you, in that 17 years, I had a lot of side effects and after effects, and one of them was trouble. And what I'm saying is, what happened with that, I always used to think I was a little bit hipper, a little bit slicker, a little bit cooler than the next guy, but that was but for the grace of God, there go I. Common phrase around AA in Akron. Grace is free, undeserved, unmerited, but it should be but for the graces of God, because I've received thousands of graces. More important than grace, what I received was mercy, not getting what I do deserve. And I, like I said, I'd say, man, wasn't I lucky last night? No, that was God, and we were just talking about that. There was a speaker out in L.A. that used to say this thing is a thing of seconds and inches, and certainly it was, because looking back on it, if I was a minute earlier, a minute later, 2 inches to the right, 3 inches to the left, I would have killed myself or somebody else. And that was, but for the grace of God, there go I. So the long and short of that was is we ended up losing everything due to what I was doing, and it was a real sin, made myself homeless, made my credit, obviously we went bankrupt, ruined Lorraine's credit and her homeless, and the biggest thing at all, it was those four little kids, it was their house. And to show you how sick I was, I didn't care that I didn't care at that point in time, it didn't matter, wife, son, daughter, mother, brother, father, any type of hope, any type of decency, any type of morality, it was dead, and it was just a matter of time. To bring you up to the end, I got my second DUI in 86. She got a little cranky, I guess, and was ready to pull the trigger on a divorce. I got into treatment the first time, was introduced to the beautiful Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Today, I know A works if you work it, and it won't if you don't. Today, I know when the pupil's ready, the teacher will appear, that's you and Almighty God. If I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, if I'm willing to keep my mouth shut, if I'm willing to follow directions in the books, whether I understand them, whether I like it or not, has no bearance. And you know what? Around where I come from, again, they say A's for those who want it, not for those who need it. And I say baloney to both of them. I said baloney. It's for those who do it. And it tells us it doesn't matter how great the necessity or desire for sobriety, that ain't enough. I got with something that's more powerful than that. Frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. Anyhow, I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, I found out in a short order of time that in this treatment center, what he was talking about, 28 days, and they gave me some nifty advice. You know, you haven't lost your wife, your kids, your job yet. YET, you're eligible too. If you drink again, those what yets will happen. I said, yeah, yeah, yeah. And they said, give A 6 months your best shot. If you don't like what you find here, we'll gladly refund the misery. You know, I told them, yeah, yeah, yeah. They told me, I've seen a lot of people too smart for A. I've never seen anybody too dumb. All the guys like you got all the answers, and I'm drinking again. I gave him the yeah, yeah, yeah. It sounded like that old Beatles song. But it was time for me to leave that treatment center, and I did, and they gave me my first big book and charged me $28,000. So that's how much my first big book cost me. I got it at home. Someday I hope it becomes a value. Anyhow, getting out of that treatment center, I decided I was going to work my program. My program consisted of me sponsoring myself and going to a couple meetings a week. Now, I'll tell you what happens when you sponsor yourself. It's pretty cool because your sponsor doesn't make you work the steps, won't make you get in that book. You don't have to pray. You won't have to get a home group. And your sponsor will let you get away with everything, including getting a drink. My program consisted of putting the plug in the jug and sitting in an AA meeting. And I'm here to tell you that is suicide. That is not recovery. Because like she said so much earlier, alcohol is the symptom, the bottle's but a symbol. I wasn't treating the selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, and I was getting sicker instead of getting better by sitting in an AA meeting, not doing anything. And long and short, I was talking to my sponsor one night, and he said, you know what, you ain't that bad, because I would come in, no offense to anybody in the back, I call that inventory row, because I was taking her inventory, she was hot, I was taking his inventory, he didn't know nothing, and certainly I was taking this speaker's inventory, he didn't know nothing, but anyhow, I left the meeting one night, and I talked to my sponsor, which was myself, and he said, you know what, you probably can have a drink, and guess what, I did, and everything they told me what happened did happen. The next 6 months were quite a joy. My boss must have been talking to my wife, and anyhow, I got into an outpatient treatment. That was 21 days. I think that big book cost me about $12,000. So here's where my program got me. I was down to 129 pounds, spitting up blood, $40,000 worth of big books. She was ready to go. She was ready to take the kids. I was unemployable. I was stealing him blind. And around Akron, they say, you keep coming back, it gets better. I'm here to tell you, it don't get better, it gets worse. I couldn't crawl back in that sewer I just came out of. I couldn't crawl back into Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's where I was July 9th of 87. Now, I'm going to tell you what happened to me. What happened to me, as I said, for the first time in my heart, in my head, to Almighty God, I said, please help me. I lay down in that bed to die. Now, don't get me wrong. I did all the jailhouse prayers. Get me out of this one. I promise I'll never do it again. He was like a teabag God. When I was in hot water, he'd come in like a teabag, get us out. Used him like an insurance policy. When I had a claim, I said, God, handle it, and I was off and running. I thought God's last name was Damn It until this day. And I made the unconditional surrender. I died that day. I surrendered to win. It's a crude way of doing it, but I lay down in that bed, and it was over. That was it. That was it. Like I said, down to 129 pounds, spitting up blood, body wouldn't die, mind that couldn't live. Got into treatment the third and final time, and I'll try and share some of the thousands of miracles that have happened. I was given a couple gifts from that day to this very day, and the first one that I got was the gift of desperation. The desperation of a dying man, and I made a covenant, if you will, with God, if you will keep me alive and if you will keep me sober, I will do anything. Be careful if you say that, because you're going to end up here in a lot of other places. I'm here to tell you. But anyhow, I was given another gift. Some call it a moment of clarity, and that's where the truth and the honesty intersect. And what it was, I was 32 years old, busted, disgusted, and couldn't be trusted. I was dying from alcoholism, and the reason was the guy in the glass. All the yeah buts, all the finger pointing, all the excuses was gone, and that was it. And I only had one place to go to, and that was God and Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was around AA, knew it wasn't a religion, knew they didn't wash your brain, knew it wasn't a cult. I knew this deal was real, the language of the heart. What goes from the heart goes to the heart. One alcoholic with another, the identification process. And like I said, I was given that gift of desperation. Anyhow, I asked him, how do you stay sober? Oh, coincidentally, there's a appendix in the back of the book, H-O-W, the H for the honesty with yourself, the O for the open mindedness, and the W for what length are you willing to go to get sober. I asked him, what is the bottom line of this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous? They told me, trust God, clean house, and help others. And they said, you need to follow the simple map. And I said, what map? And they said, M-A-P. M for meetings, AA meetings, it is. A for the activity and the fellowship. More importantly than that, the action of the steps. And P for the power of prayer. And they said, you know what? I needed to get God. Thank you. And I said, well, I don't know about this God. I need some help with it. And they said, it's real simple. There's only two things I needed to know. I said, I can do that. And I said, what are the two things? They said, there is a God and you ain't it. And we were starting off really bad there. And they also said, you got to pray to God. And I said, why do I have to pray to God? And you know what they told me? He likes to hear from strangers. So whatever you do, keep away from them old timers. Keep away from them because they'll tell you what it is. And they said, somebody as sick as you, you got to get some spam. S-P-A-M, not the stuff that you eat. The S for the steps, P for the power of prayer, the A for the action activity, M for the meetings. I went into this halfway house, and I really crossed that imaginary line from being dry into becoming sober. And I'll tell you what happened. They said one of the biggest things I had to change was my attitude, because I had a chip on my shoulder. I'm sure it's hard for you to believe. They said, you got to get that bad attitude to get an attitude of gratitude. And they taught me the simple prayer, and it can be said morning, noon, and night in every situation of my life. And it goes like this. Thank you, God, for what you've given me. Thank you, God, for what you've taken away. Most of all, thank you, God, for what you've left me. Thank you, God, for what was the agony, the torture, the hell of alcoholism. Thank you, God, for what is this day of sobriety, and thank you, God, for what will be. And I found out in a short order of time, if you believe, you receive, and if you doubt, you go without, and if you pray, why worry, and if you worry, why pray. They told me to give time, time. Recovery is a process. It's not an event. God doesn't shut one door without opening another. And I didn't know what they were talking about. But I'm here to tell you, my last 23 years, if I would have written down everything I would have hoped for or dreamed for, I would have sold myself short. And that's what this book says. Lack of power was our dilemma. There is one who has all power. That one is God. And it tells us in no uncertain terms, either God is or he isn't. God's everything or he's nothing. And when I made that decision, I tell you what, these are just words in a book. This is the real deal. I call it emotional sobriety, everything out of that textbook. To show you what happened with that and with the power of God, I came back to the Akron area. She got an attorney. The divorce was on, and I was well enough. I loved her, loved the kids, but I wasn't going to fight it. She let me in that house that day to talk about it. Biggest mistake of her life, because I haven't moved out since then. Now, what I'm trying to say is that marriage was beyond any type of counseling therapy, any type of psychiatry, whatever. It was God and Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps. The kids were 4, 5, 7, and 9. You had 23 years to them. You should see the fine ladies and gentlemen that you guys raised. I take no credit, and, of course, my wife. We were talking about it the other day. I said, honey, you raised 5 good kids. She goes, what are you talking about? We only had 4. And I said, no, I was the 5th and the worst. And she said, yeah, you're right. So, anyhow, Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a design of living, and obviously it's a way of life, and that's what it talks about. I could never carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous long enough, well enough, hard enough, good enough to tell you how my life is. I don't believe the words in this textbook. He does a good job of trying to describe the agony, the torture, the hell of alcoholism, but I don't believe you can find the words of sobriety and what it means. He does a great job. He talks about the fourth dimension. He talks about utopia. He talks about heaven on earth. And I'm here to tell you, those aren't just words. That is a way of life, the fourth dimension. It's unbelievable, and we were talking about that earlier. Anyhow, like I said, they told me from the beginning, if you want what we have, you'll be willing to go to any length. They said, if you want a helping hand, it's on the end of your arms. You got two of them, and he said, you better go for it, boy. He said, you got to do the possible, and God will do the impossible, and that's been my experience. They said, you got to get a home group and a sponsor, and I said, why? And they said, because if you spend a lot of time with yourself, you're a consultant, an idiot. They were right. I said, why else? And they said, because your head's like a bad neighborhood, and when you stay in the hood too long, you know what happens with that. You end up getting caught in a mess. Alcoholic of my sort, I lost everything, and the first thing I got back was my opinion. When you hear me say I think, you better watch out, because we're all going to get drunk. And I'm so glad that we have a timer here, because I'm here to tell you my talking is like my drinking. Once I start, I don't stop. So they must have called from Akron to tell me what was going on. I want to close up. I could have saved you all time in misery, but my job is to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comforted. This is what alcohol did for me, and then it ended up doing to me, and the same thing with sobriety. It's called positively negative. It goes like this. We drank for joy and became miserable. We drank for sociability and became argumentative. We drank for sophistication and became obnoxious. We drank for friendship and made enemies. We drank for sleep and awake and exhausted. We drank for strength and felt weak. We drank to feel exhilaration and ended up depressed. We drank for medicinal purposes and acquired health problems. We drank to calm down and ended up with shakes. We drank for confidence and became afraid. We drank to make conversation flow more easily, and the words came out slurred and incoherent. We drank to diminish our problems and saw them multiply. We drank to feel heavenly, ended up feeling like hell. We drank to cope with life and invited death. Last but not least, it says, I asked God for strength to achieve. I was made weak that I might learn humbly to obey. I asked for health that I might do greater things. I was given sickness that I might do better things. I was given infirmity or sickness that I might do better things. I asked for riches that I might be happy. I was given poverty that I might be wise. I asked that I might have the power for the praise of men. I was given weakness that I might feel the need of God. I asked for all things that I might enjoy life. I was given life that I might enjoy all things. Almost despite myself, I lost everything, but I got nothing that I asked for, but everything I hoped for. Almost despite myself, my unspoken prayers were answered. I, among most men, richly blessed. Last but not least, final words from our co-founders as Bill was pulling away from Dr. Bob's and Ardmore and said, Bill, let's keep it simple. And in his last message to all of us, he said, AA's 12 steps can be simmered down in two words, love and service. And certainly Bill's last words, and I think at the dinner that you're talking about, he was too sick to even show up. And I think Lois came and read a letter, if I wasn't mistaken. He said, I want to salute you, and I want to thank you for your lives. Atlantic Group, thanks for having me. Come to Akron, Ohio.